Well, look, we are in our first of two Sunday specials where we're going to be interviewing people in the church family about their story, about how they came to know Jesus. I'm going to welcome Tim. Tim, you come on up with your cup. Some of you will know Tim Scarf, others of you won't. Tim, what is your job? Are you kind of like a paper boy on steroids? What is your...
There we go. I've got a news delivery round where I deliver papers, bulk orders of papers around the county from 4 a.m. in the morning till about 9:30, 7 days a week.
Wow. Okay, that's quite a tough job, isn't it? 4 o'clock every morning. Well done. You're looking full of life this morning. Lots of coffee?
Lots of practice on what I'm going to say now, to be honest.
Okay. So we're going to hear a bit about your story. I guess you are a Norwich City fan. The chances are Norwich City might end up staying up.
Yeah, brilliant.
Because the league might be cancelled.
Yeah, basically I'm a lifelong Norwich City fan. I got my first season ticket 50 years ago. I sit just in front of Delia and just behind the away dugout.
Wow.
Which is handy for the wine when you're near Delia, to be honest, but I'm sorry.
Have you ever chatted to her?
Yeah, I have chatted to Delia, yeah.
Is she all right?
Yeah, she's a lovely lady.
Is she?
Well, the club wouldn't be there without her, so we've got to be thankful for her.
Well, there we go. We're thankful for Delia. That's great. Okay. So, Tim, tell us, what was life like for you growing up?
Growing up was quite hard in a way, but quite rewarding. My dad walked out on my mum and I when I was only eight, so... I was the man of the house fairly early. We had no money, no car, and no holidays, but I had a blissfully happy childhood. I played football every day with my friends, went to school, was fairly academic at school, and was in most of the school teams, and had quite a good childhood, really.
Okay, and so what part did the Christian faith play in your upbringing?
None. None at all, really. Well, slightly. My aunt and uncle, Dorothy Rayner and John, were very religious, devoutly religious. And as a small boy, I used to imagine if anything happened to me, because we'd go to heaven on the coattails of them, because my mum was her sister, and I thought probably we'd get there with them because they were that good a people. But I wasn't anti-Christian. I just never thought about it, really. And I had no friends at all who were Christians.
Right. Okay, so you're here today because you are a Christian.
Yeah.
That's why we've got you on stage. When did you start thinking about it? If you grew up not thinking about it at all, what was the point that made you think, actually, I need to think about this?
Well, for 53, I'm 59 now. I know probably you think I'm only 40, but I am 59. And I was 53 before I ever set foot in a church on a Sunday. And basically, my mum was a big factor in my life, because when you're an only child and you haven't got a father particularly, and she died suddenly in hospital. Auntie and I just managed to get to the hospital before she died, and I managed to speak to her just before she died. And Auntie Matt asked me in the hospital if she could say a prayer for mum. Now, basically, mum and I weren't remotely religious, but I looked down at mum on the bed and thought, well, it can't do any harm. It might do a bit of good. So Auntie said a prayer in the hospital. And then because my job involves driving early in the morning on your own, you get an awful lot of time to think. And obviously that week after my mum died, I had an awful lot to think about. And it kept coming back to me, the prayer. So when I met up with my friends, Damo and Gaz, on the Friday afternoon, I said, I'm thinking of going to church on Sunday. Now, Damon and Gary are very different. They're not here, so it doesn't matter what I say about them. But... basically, Gary's very, very upfront. He goes, church on Sunday, what do you want to go there for? You've never been before, have you? I said, no. He said, do you even know what goes on in a church on Sunday? I said, well, I don't know that either. And Damon's the opposite. He's very considered. And Damon said, well, you do what you think is right on Sunday, but I'd far rather you spent Sunday with Kim, me, and the boys than with a load of posh people you know nothing about, who you've got nothing in common with. And then he said, what type of church is it anyway? And I said, well, what does that matter? I don't know that either. And he said, because if it's got a confession box, I should warn him you're going to be late for work on Monday morning. You've got 50 years worth of confessing to get in. So I decided it wasn't a very good idea, but something just kept nagging at me. So I telephoned Auntie on the Saturday morning and I said, how would you feel if I came with you to your church just once on Sunday? And Auntie, there was a slight delay. I think she was a little bit surprised. And Auntie said, I'd love you to come. And you've got to understand, my only understanding of church on a Sunday is watching the Vicar of Dibley on TV. So I said to her, Auntie, how many people do you get in your church? About 20? So she said, oh, darling, we get a few more than 20. I said, well, how many more than 20? She said, well, 200 more than 20. And I said, well, I won't come because I won't know anybody. And then she said, well, we can always go and have a Sunday lunch afterwards. And I said, oh, right, winner, winner, chicken dinner. I'll come. So that was my first time here.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Okay, so you came that one Sunday. You were like, I'm going to give it a go for one Sunday.
Yep.
Did you come back? Why did you come back?
Right. I can't remember hardly anything about that Sunday service. All I can remember is how kind everyone was. They crowded round, said they were sorry about Mum, and were really supportive. But my one abiding memory of that service was how normal everybody in here was. I assumed that someone came up to me and started talking about football in a church. I thought, and although there were a few posh people in here, I've ended up close friends with the poshest person in here, really. So that decided me that I would come back twice more just till the funeral, get a couple of weeks of support from people, and then knock it on the head.
Right, okay. So you came back then a few more times, and the funeral came. Did you stop at that point?
Yes, I did, really. It was the Wednesday after the funeral. A medical student, he's actually a doctor now, and he would have been here today, but he's obviously busy. A doctor, David, a medical student, he'd been really kind to me. He'd come to me each week and said, how are the funeral plans going? How is your work going? So I rang Auntie up on the Wednesday, and I said, that friend of yours, David, the medical student, can you give me his phone number? Because I want to thank him for how kind he's been. And Auntie said, but I don't rightly know who he is. And I thought, well, I couldn't believe it, because Auntie's been coming here for about 100 years, and she basically knows everybody in the congregation. I couldn't believe she didn't know him. So I said to her, I'll come one more time, thank him, thank the other people, and that'll be it. And I came, we had the coffee, he came over, asked about the funeral, and I turned to him and I said, how long have you been going to Surrey Chapel? And he said, four weeks. And I said, but I've only been coming 4 weeks. He said, I know, I arrived the day you did. And I said, well, that's ridiculous. Why have you been so kind to me and asking me things? Because you don't know me, you don't know my family. And he turned to me and he said, that's what Christians do, Tim. That's what Christians do. Four little words, but they had a big effect on me, because I'm from a sporting background. And when new people come into the team and into the squad, you're not very nice to them, and you don't make them feel very welcome, because you don't want them taking your place or the place of a friend of yours on the team. So that kind of selfless attitude, it resonated with me, and it brought me another couple of months here.
Right, okay. So the love of that random bloke, who was also random to church in some ways, made you think, right, I'm going to keep coming here.
Yep.
So... right, you kept coming back. What was it then you came to understand that made you think, right, I need to do something about Jesus, I need to start following him? What was it?
Well, Tom Chapman, the pastor at the time, put on a Strictly Christianity group. For those who don't know, Strictly Christianity is like Strictly Come Dancing, except you substitute the dancing for the religion. And you basically go with a Christian to learn more about the Bible.
Right. I mean, just to say, we run courses like that, a course called Life Explored, Christianity Explored. And I'll tell you a bit about that at the end of this interview, but keep going.
Yeah, and I'm the kind of person who I'd like to be good at things, or if I'm not good at anything, I'd like to jack it in because I don't want to look stupid. That way they say it's not the winning that's the taking part. Well, I could never do it if you couldn't win. It didn't seem worth it. So once I went to Strictly Christianity, I soon realized everybody knew more about the Bible than I did. Even the non-Christians knew more about the Bible than I did. I tried different things. I sat right next to Sancha because she seemed to know more than everybody. And if they asked a question or put you into a group, I had Sancha to help me. But that didn't really work. And so I knuckled down, and David helped me. And I went through three sessions of Strictly. And at the end of the third session, Bev and Ralph Manning were doing Strictly with Tom, And I said to Bev, I'm really near now. I think I'm really near, but I can't make that final step because I don't know enough about the Bible. I just don't. And Bev said, it's not learning the Bible parrot fashion. It's what's in your heart and what you believe and what's in there and how you are with interact with God and that. And I realized I was there.
Okay. So just think about it. Why does God accept you today then? So you're saying there's been some significant light bulb moments, but why does God accept you today?
Well, I think I accept him and he accepts me because God forgives your sins and everybody sins, and I'm on my third, fourth, fifth chance. But I think to get your head around the mind-blowingness that God's only son Jesus was without sin, and he was prepared to sacrifice his only son to save all of us. And I think once you get that bit in your head and you believe that and you move on from that, you know. And I sat in here for a year and 8 months and watched the communion come past every week. And I wanted it to be special. I wanted to really believe, and I wanted it to be a special day. And I sit in the same place in the church every week. And everybody around me, I was conscious of them watching me each week, thinking, is he near enough? Is he going to take it? And I had tears in my eyes that day, and a lot of the people around me were moved on that day. And I felt like I was coming home. I felt like I joined the church family. I'd been here a year and 8 months, but I felt like I finally joined the club, if you know what I mean. Right. I've been supporting Norwich for 50 years and had loads of disappointments. So the last 6 years with God have been quite a relief, really. Because at least he won't disappoint you.
Yeah, that is wonderful. That is wonderful. Well, look, final question for you, Tim. Thank you so much for being so honest and sharing so much. But what difference does following Jesus make for you today? And I know we were chatting about this on Monday, and we could be here all day hearing about the difference. But just tell us about, particularly with your neighbours, what difference do you think it has made with your neighbours?
It's not a very flattering story with my neighbours, but I've lived in the same place for 20 years, and I've had the same neighbours on either side of me for 20 years. And after I started coming to church, one of the neighbours came to me and said, you're a completely different person. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, you're a completely different person. I thought I was a really good neighbour, but they turned around and said, you've got time for us now. You don't just say, how are you, and then listen to the answer and clear off indoors. You actually seem as though you want to interact with people and you want to help people. And I mean, I thought I was a brilliant neighbour, so I was a bit taken aback when they said that. But I try as best I can to not preach to other people, but to try and bring the word to other people and make them better people.
Yeah, that's great. And look, one last thing. I haven't prepped you for this, so this could go horribly wrong.
Yeah, probably will.
But obviously, there's a lot of fear going around about the coronavirus. How does trusting Jesus make a difference for you in the midst of that?
Actually, I was talking to one of my work colleagues who's here today. This will be the first real test in my life that I have had without my mum. Mm. Because although I wasn't always living with her or with her, whenever anything went wrong, I had someone to fall back on. And I said to my friend Andy today, who I work with, I said, this is the first time that I'll have God to rely on now, and I can speak to God on my round, and I can speak to God, and I would have felt alone, you know. And I wouldn't say he's replaced my mum, because he's far more than that, but it's give you something so you don't feel as though you're alone. You don't feel you're alone.
That's wonderful. And the wonderful thing is God is in charge of everything and everyone. And in Christ we are safe.